Okay, so last week we talked about Gan, and actually, well, we'll go a little out of order. I noticed today, while looking around, Rav Soloveitchik has an interesting ha'ara, an interesting point that he makes. Now, last week we talked about Gan. What was the way that we described him? So we used the verse from Shema, right? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, right? And we discussed the dual nature of God, of both being eternal and timeless, as opposed to being and everywhere, as opposed to being separate and distinct from us. And that was the challenge of understanding that verse, the Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So we kind of left it there. You could continue on with the Shema. In fact, we spoke about a little bit this past Shabbat so what do you do with that? So the instructions of the paragraph are Vahafta es Hashem Elokecha, you shall love God b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol milvecha, with all your heart, with all your money, with all your soul, v'yu adrim eila, these things will be on your heart, and you'll teach your children, and you'll do various mitzvot, you'll do various commandments. That's kind of the continuation of that statement from last week. But if one thinks about it, it's all a description. Right, it's all a Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right, this is Moses. Moses speaks. Moshe speaks. Right, listen, Israel, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And what do you do with that? And these are all the things that you're supposed to do. It's all a conversation of a description of God. It's all a conversation of God in the third person. Right, this is what you do, and this is how you relate to a God. If there's a God that is giving you direction, how to make the most of yourself, right? And this is how you relate to that, and it's all an instruction coming from a man. There's nothing really to do. It's not really a relationship type discussion. It's a description type discussion, and that makes sense as it's all in third person. Well, if we look in the Shmona Esrei, if we look in the main paradigm of prayer, which I guess we'll use tonight, is the Shmona Esrei, is the Tefillah, the Amidah that we say, which is during the week 19 blessings, during on Shabbat it's 7 blessings. It's but all of it is Baruch Atah. It's all about blessed are you. Well, the word blessed we've discussed there. Increase 30. Whatever Baruch means, we discussed that last week, Baruch Atah, right? It's all about you. It's all of a sudden turned from being a description of God, which is Shema, and 2 minutes later we say, okay, now we're going to act upon that. It becomes now a direct conversation with God, as opposed to before when it was only a description of God. All right, so we'll discuss that a little more, what that means to have that relationship and what the point is of having that relationship and how we ask questions, in terms of prayer. So the Rav Yisrael Salanter, I believe, is famous for saying that we have a commandment in the Torah. The Torah talks about that when you're in a time of trouble, when things are difficult for you, you should call out to Hashem. You should daven it. And that's a mitzvah that we have. How often is the mitzvah? Whatever it is, but there's some kind of mitzvah relating in that way. So Rav Salanter once said, supposedly, didn't hear it from him, that if it wasn't for the fact that the Torah commanded, that there's actually a commandment of prayer, we would consider it heretical to pray. Right? Why would it be heretical to pray? All the other faiths seem to have this idea of prayer. Right? So the idea of prayer, especially if one takes the standard approach, if you were to ask most people in the street, hey, what does it mean to do prayer? So we'll see what the definition is in a second. Well, it's something to do with asking for things. Right? This is not the way it should be, and maybe you could strain things out to be the way that it should be. Well, if we have a belief that God is involved with everything, and God is everywhere, and every place, and every time, and all of that, well, then don't you think He knows already? Right? Don't you think He recognizes that? Don't you think, right? And furthermore, and this is really a different class for a different time, you could go to that site, YU Torah, there's a class on it there, right? Is everything for the best? Right? But we kind of have a belief that everything is kind of for the best, whatever that means, whether, you could look there for more details on that. But what gives me a right to then pray to make things better? What gives me a right to change things if really everything is already out there for the best? So that question is really premised on, first, that that's what prayer means. So that's really, in a way, based on a standard definition. As we said, you ask people in the street what it means to pray, and you'll get one of these definitions from a from the dictionary, which I went today, dictionary.com. And what does it mean to pray? So it's pray is a verb. To offer devout petition, praise, and thanks, right, to a god or an object of worship. Okay, to offer, to bring, to make a petition of, to make petition or entreaty for, to crave, right? She prayed his forgiveness, she craved, she asked for his forgiveness. All of those seem to be that you're at some level of disadvantage. Right? They're all at you need something, that there's a God out there that has everything. You need something. Right? So God has the ability to bestow that, God has the ability to give that. So I'm going to ask him for that. Right? And that really has a lot to do with the Elokeinu image that we talked about last week. Right? Last week we said the Yud Hey Vav Hey, the God is present, right? The loving, connected, right? That's one form, and then characteristic, and then there's the distant, giving me space, right? God is a king, right? That's the other form. So that real, and by the way, if you know, going back to last week for a second, also the way that's kind of Eastern religion versus Western religion, right? Monotheism technically is, right, that there's a God, and there's one God there, and I'm here, right? That's really Eloheinu, right? That's the idea of God being, right? As opposed to Yud Hey Vav Hey, that God is always present everywhere, everything, wherever I look, I can see God. So that's like Eastern thought. That's pantheistic, right? So we kind of have to, at any point that we're someplace in the middle between the two of them. Right? We have a kind of a combination of both of them, however that was kind of last week. So the idea of prayer as defined in our dictionaries all have to do with asking for something. God is Eloheinu. God is distant. God is a God and me as a me. God is infinite and me as infinitesimal. God is all-knowing and God and me as all stupid, and I'm going to ask him for things. Right? If one looks on that dictionary site, I usually just look at that top line. If you ever scan down on dictionary.com, how many people have ever been to that site? Right? It's amazing, right? So you can scan down. They have all different types of dictionaries. So one of they have is the what's it called? How do you find the origin of the name? The
etymological
dictionary, right? So there's an etymological definition there as well. So where does the term pray come from? So I didn't make you scroll down past all the ads. You could just look here, where it says 1250 to 1300 Middle English prin. Comes from the old French word prior, which comes from the Latin word precari, which means, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but which means to beg, pray, derivative of prex. Now, I don't know what prex means. I assume it has something similar to do with pray. Right, but it means to beg and to pray. And yes, you know?
No, I just had a question. Does that mean that our definition of tefillah doesn't translate to prayer?
Oh. Very good. Right. That's right. That's what we're doing tonight. We're kind of shifting that paradigm a little bit.
Okay.
Right. So all to beg, to pray, to ask for things. Now, as we discussed last week, although not in so much detail, right, the problem with that man has with Elokeinu God, right, with monotheism, right, is that God is, you know, why does he care about me? Why is God imposing these like punishments on me? You know, like I have to do these mitzvahs. Why? I mean, you know, God is not, like, why do I constantly have to feel smaller than? Why do I constantly have to feel like there's this being that will always be greater than me? So that's the same thing with prayer. It's the same thing with, you know, if we're going to define prayer as, well, if I want to be healthy, I better say the blessing for health. And if I want to have wealth, if I want to have money, I better make sure to say those blessings for wealth. Right? And if I want this, I better ask for that, because after all, I'm nothing and he's everything and I need to ask for that. Right? So that's kind of, that's the word I'm looking for. That's kind of, you know, it doesn't make people feel so great after a while, right? And in fact, who's the people that have, what age people have the biggest problem with prayer? Right? What age people?
Young.
What age though?
Teenagers.
Teenagers have the biggest problem with prayer. Why do teenagers have the biggest problem with prayer? Because teenagers are all about independence, right? 2-year-olds are also all about independence, right? But I think think in their view, they could kind of like, you know, latch on to God and therefore be independent from their parent, right? So that, I think that it kind of helps them. But once you get to the teenage years, and as you are all about establishing your independence, so why am I stuck praying to a God every day that I can't see and I can't feel? And, you know, my friend in the other school doesn't do this every day, and he seems to have just as much money and just as much health as I do, right? And that's a very tough discussion to have. That's a very tough conversation to have. So I try to shift the paradigm somewhat. And we're going to shift it somewhat. Instead of doing in the past I've done the whiplash change, we're going to do it gradually tonight, okay? So instead, the first shift I want to do is from prayer as being a request to prayer as being a relationship, okay? So what is that? So where do we learn the idea of prayer from? Where is our paradigm for it? Now, we do see it in the Bible. We do see various people that are doing it throughout the Torah, right? Moshe obviously prayed a lot, right? He had to save us multiple times, right? And Abraham certainly prayed, right? But we don't really, in any of those cases, really have a description of what it looked like, right? We don't necessarily see that, right? We do see... The first time maybe there are better other descriptions, but the time that we learn from is a description of Hannah. Hannah appears in the beginning of the book of Samuel, the book of Shmuel. She is the mother of, she actually appears in the book of Shmuel before we knew of Shmuel, because Samuel wasn't alive yet, right? That wasn't having any children. She had this co-wife of hers that was driving her crazy and making fun of her and saying, you know, you're, you know, this is the problem, that's the problem, all the things that you're not supposed to do, right? And she was, like, really upset and really depressed. And her husband wasn't exactly being the best, you know, you can see the next source, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Her husband was acting very much like a Martian as well. So... The Gemara tells us, Amar Rav Hamnuna, Kama Hilchasa Gavruta Ikalamashva Mihani Krai Dechana. There are many halachos, many laws we learn out from that reading of Chana, from what we read about from the pasuk describing Chana's prayer. So what is V'chana Hi Medaberes Ali? But while she was praying for a child, she was speaking to her on her heart. Mikan Lemispala Tsar Shichavin Libo. Right? So from here we see that somebody who is davening needs to have what we call kavana, needs to have thought, needs to have intent, needs to have some idea of what they're doing. Right? So just, you know, on one hand we can say, oh, of course, like how would you not have intent? How could you pray without, like, what does that mean? Right? On the other hand, well, it's not so crazy. Right, because many of our mitzvos, many of our commandments that we do, there is an ongoing debate throughout the Talmud whether mitzvos tzrichos kavana or mitzvos lav tzrichos kavana. Right, do commandments need us to have intent when we do it? Right, when we eat matzah on Pesach night, on Passover night, so do I have to have kavana? Do I have to have intent? I'm hereby doing this to fulfill my commandment of eating matzah, or can I just say, I don't know, that's good, I'm eating it, and I've fulfilled whatever I need to fulfill just by eating without necessarily recognizing that it has to do with the commandment. So whatever that however that debate is resolved, and it's, you know, it's ongoing, by tefillah, you need to have kavana. Right? So already you see that it's not just a commandment. It's not the kind of thing, it's just as God said, you have to do this, you have to do that. Oh, and you have to do this whole prayer thing three times a day, otherwise you're going to be in trouble. Right? So you all of a sudden see, more is demanded of you, right? Not just to get through it, but to actually have intent to recognize what you're doing. Okay, next thing. Raksva seha na'ot. Right? Her lips were moving. Mikan l'mispala sheyachtuch bisvasav. From here we see that a person that is praying should move their lips. I just realized I meant to put in the translation. I apologize for that. Mikan l'mispala, a person praying needs to move their lips. V'kola lo yishma, her voice wasn't heard. Mikan she'asur la'agbia kolo bitfilato. From here we see that it's prohibited to raise your voice in prayer. So on one hand, you have to have intent, you have to say it, you have to move your lips in a way you almost have to hear it yourself, but you're not allowed to have other people hear it. So all of these laws are learned out from Chana. So found that very interesting, right? That we're learning out all of our laws of prayer that men and women have to keep from a woman, right? So that's an interesting thing, right, that we learn out from her. So I quickly looked for my Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus book, and I couldn't find it, and I realized that it was on loan to somebody in need of that book. So I quickly Googled that thing, thinking I'd find some John Gray website. Instead, you got a Wikipedia. It has its own Wikipedia page. So you don't have to read the book; just read the Wikipedia page. To where it says, right, about the book. The book, because how many people here have read it? By the way, that's it. Oh my gosh. It's like required reading. All right. Anyways, so
I have a book club.
There was. I was once listening to a lecture from a more, we'll say, right-wing rabbi who was complaining to his students that, you know, I don't know what's going on. People, I understand. This is wild. I understand that grooms of chasanim and chasanim mean grooms. Are reading books about relationships written by Gentiles. And I think to myself, that's terrible. And I'm like, wait a second, I know what he's talking about. So the main example that he used, the book is about how men, Martians, women are from Venus. I mean, they think in different ways, they act, they have different emotions. That's what the book is about. So one example, the prime example that it gives, this is the first paragraph of Wikipedia, so this is like the main example. One example from this paradigm is the book's assertion that men complain that if they try to offer solutions to problems that women want to talk about, women do not necessarily want to find solutions, but only want to talk about these problems. Right? I see a few nods. Okay. What does he mean? I mean, the men will express their issues with problems in ways because I need to help you find a resolution. I need you to help me find a resolution. Why else would I be talking about it if not that I wanted your help? Right? Women, that is not necessarily the case, right? They want to just talk about their problems just to talk about their problems and to feel that they're creating an emotional bond with you, and that will give them the strength to do whatever it is that they need to do. Your main job is, as the man, is pretty much to stay quiet and do things like, that's terrible, I feel horrible, and etc. Okay, so what does that have to do with this prayer of Chana? So if one interprets tefillah not as just a list of requests that I need you to take care of things for me, right? I can't do this, God. I need you to help me with this thing, right? So first of all, it becomes a little bit frustrating because you don't necessarily hear an answer back, right? And also you get into that problem of why do I constantly have to ask for things, right? I don't like asking for things all the time. Right, but if one perhaps looks at what was Chana doing, Chana wasn't necessarily, she was asking, but she was also attempting to develop a relationship. She was also attempting to connect with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right? And that's perhaps why she is the paradigm. Because prayer is not just about asking, although that is maybe part of it. It's also about relating. It's also about connecting. It's feeling the idea that I have somebody with me. Right? There's that quote that I gave here many years ago that I think is still remembered, and then Rabbi J.J. Schachter, when he was here, quoted as well, but Rav Salvechik, when he relates, the most important thing that I learned from my mother. Right? We quoted Rav Salvechik a few times last week, of Yosef Salvechik, the teacher of most of my teachers, I should say. So he has a famous quote that he describes what he learned from his mother. He describes, I learned from my father Hilchos Shabbos, and I learned from my mother how to live Shabbat. And we'll discuss that maybe next week. But he goes on to say, and I learned from my mother the most important thing in life. I learned from her, right, what is the most important thing in life? Right, that's a pretty amazing thing to just say. I learned from her the most important thing in life. Well, what is that, right? What is the most important thing in life? Right, to feel the hand of God resting upon my frail shoulder. Right, to feel that I'm not alone. To feel that I have somebody with me, to feel that I have somebody that loves me, to feel that I have somebody that cares for me. Right? And that is a way, that's what comes out from what we talked about last week. Right? On one hand, I have a God that's given me responsibility to make my own decisions. On the other hand, I have a God that cares for me, that's there for me, and all of those kinds of things. So that relationship, that connection, perhaps could be seen in the way that we open up our Shmoneh Esrei, right? How do we begin every time that we're about to make our requests, every time that we're about to do our tefillah, every time that we're about to we'll say for now, ask for things. So we say these words, Hashem Sfasai Tiftach Ufi Yagid Tehilasecha, right? Sometimes we just like, you know, rush over them because it's time to get up. But what does it mean? Hashem Sfasai Tiftach. Hashem, you open my lips so that I could recite your praise. Right? So in a way, you could just say, how about God, you not open my lips, and you could do your own praising, right? What do you need my praising for? Right? So we say, you open my lips, because in order for me to do something, I need you. And in order for you, and what will I do with that? It will be going right back to you. It will be a way of an expression of you. I will ensure that if you open my lips, allow me to do my prayer, the prayers that will come out, for lack of a better term for now, right, the tefillah that will come out, right, will be a praise of you. Not just the fact that I'm going to say, you know, God is wonderful and amazing and does amazing things, right, but everything that I will do from that and all the inspiration I will gain from that will then be a clear manifestation of your inspiration. Okay, so Hashem Sfasai Tiftach, Hashem, you'll open my lips so that my mouth will say your praise. And as we said last week, it was the only way that we could do Baruch Atah, the only way we could have Hashem in this world is if we perform that praise. Right? That's what we can give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's step one. That's shift one from tefillah being a way of asking for things, especially on Shabbat. You know, especially people that come, right, pretty much only come to shul on Shabbat, right? You don't ask for anything on Shabbat. In fact, a few things that you ask for, you gotta like put in the caveat that I'm not really allowed to ask for you for that today, because, right? Shabbat is all about this relationship. Shabbat is all about a connection. It's not all about, you know, the things that I need to get from you. So that's shift one. So now to go further on, a further idea of what it means to pray. So I wanted to show two psukim, or really four, but you know, two psukim in Bereishis. Done before here, but I think this is important. So the pasuk tells us that when you know, the story is in Genesis that that Yaakov married Leah, he wanted to marry Rachel, instead he married Leah, and then he married Rachel, and then Leah had all these children, and Rachel, Rachel starts getting kind of nervous. She's like, oh, yeah, what's going to be? Like, you know, my co-wife is going to have so many more wives than, or more, so many more children than me. What's going to be? So, and I'm not having any children. Something is terrible. So let me give you my maidservant will be your third wife, Bilhah. Right, so that's what happens. So Bilhah has a child, Dan, and then she has another child, and that's where we are here. Vatar od vatelet Bilhah, right? Shifchat Rachel ben sheni liYaakov. So she became pregnant, she conceived again, and she had another child, and a second child for Jacob. Vatomer Rachel, and Rachel said, Naftuli Elohim Naftalti imachti gam yacholti vatikar shemo Naphtali. Right? What does she say? And Rachel said, with the divine bonds I have been joined to my sister. That's not the best translation. I have also prevailed. And she named him Naphtali. So Naphtali is my middle name, right? I feel a kinship here, right? But Naphtali is I prevailed, right? Naphtalti imacholsi, right? I struggled with, sorry, not prevailed, but Naphtalti, I joined to my sister. I mean, I joined. I struggled with her. I overcame. I had a struggle. I challenged this, and therefore he named the child Naphtali. What's the root of the word Naphtalti? So that connects to lihit palel, that connects to prayer. So prayer, on one hand, at least learned out from this verse, is some form of struggle. Right? Not a form of request, but a form of struggle. Okay. The more famous, the more clear example is the next one. And this we'll build up on. This is at the end of Genesis, that Jacob has now come down to Egypt to meet Joseph there. Right? Joseph has been ruling Egypt now for a couple of decades, right? I think he's been here a while. It's unclear what kind of relationship Joseph had with Jacob, right? Yaakov and Yosef. Did they really, you know, Joseph is in Cairo, right? is running the country, and Jacob is far away in some other land in Egypt, but still not so close. It's unclear whether they really had that much to do with each other during that time. So finally, the word gets to Joseph, word gets to Yosef that his father is sick. So he gets his two children together. Maybe one of them was learning with Jacob all those years, okay? But he takes his two children and says, I want you to go, we're going to go to Jacob, go to Yaakov to get that, to get a final bracha, to get a final blessing. So the verse describes that he brings them forward and Jacob asks, who are these people? And Joseph has to explain to them, these are your two, these are my two children that he had here in Egypt and whatever. And the pasuk says, "Vinei Yisrael kavadumi zokein lo yuchal liros." So Jacob's eyes were, I put in the wrong English, I'm sorry. Jacob's eyes were blind, he couldn't see. By a geisho samilav, and he brought them forward to him. By shach lehem v'chabek lehem, and he kissed them and he caressed them. Excuse me. Okay, so the next one says, by yomer Yisrael el Yosef. So Yisrael said to Yosef, ra'o fanecha lo filalti, which is translated as, and this is here in the English, I never expected that I would see your face. And yet Hashem showed me not just you, but your children as well. Meaning, I never thought I would see your face. Rashi comments on that. What does the word filalti mean? So Rashi here, the commentary of Rashi on the bottom, lo milani libi lachashov. It never entered my mind to think. This one on two sides? How'd that happen? Yeah. I start doing the PDF thing. Okay. Lo milani libi lachashov. It never entered my mind to think machshava she'era panecha od. It never entered my mind to think that I would see your face again. Pilalti, what does pilalti mean? Lashon machshava. It is a language of thought, right? Again, the same root, lehit palel, our words that we generally colloquially translate as prayer, in two places here is not being translated as prayer. In one place it's translated as struggle, or in a way an argument, and the other place is being translated as a thought, a machshava, a thought. And whose thought is it? It's not God's thought, it's my thought. So what does it mean, lehit palel? It's another thing Rav Salavitchi points out. The word lehit palel is reflexive, which I think what that means is, right, it's not describing the thing I'm talking about, it's describing me. It goes back to me. It's describing my actions. So what am I doing when I'm praying? I am A, struggling, and B, thinking. And in a way, what really is he saying here? Lashon machshava, right? I never thought I would see your face. I never even dreamt that I would see your face. It never even occurred to me. The possibility never entered my mind that I would ever be able to see you, my son Joseph, again. And yet it happened. Right? So, okay. It's not necessarily a proof for that prayer works. Plus he's saying, I never prayed for it. Right? I never asked for it. You're told, that's not a thought that we had. It's not a thought that I have. But that's what prayer means. Prayer is not necessarily, or tefillah, is not necessarily, these are my list of things that I'm asking God to do for me. But in a way, it is, these are the list of things that I want to make sure I think is possible. And if one goes to the history, if one goes to the Shmon Esrei, the Amidah, the paradigm of our prayer over the course of the day, so when was it written? So you get somewhat conflicting reports over the course of the Talmud about when it was written. But certainly the idea for it, right, the idea and the outline came from the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah was the assembly of rabbis in the beginning of the Second Temple period. Now, although I've probably told this so many times that we all here know it already, but the Second Temple period, sometimes in people's image, is especially the beginning. What do you mean it's special? They came back. All the Jews came back from Babylon and rebuilt the temple. If one looks in the text, and maybe we'll, I think I'm leaning towards that when we finish the second book of Kings on Shabbos afternoons to go to Ezra and Nehemiah. If one reads the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, you'll see that is not the case at all. The very few Jews came back. The Jews that came back were the poor, the Nevuchs, the people that couldn't really make it in Babel. right? They had a problem finding kohanim. They had a problem finding priests because the priests were able to make it in Babel. They had a little bit more money, so they didn't really bother coming back. We had yesterday's daf. Well, I'm not even sure. I'm not sure who's yesterday's daf, but the daf that we learned yesterday here, we learned the verse where Nehemiah is lamenting the idea that everybody is being mechalal Shabbos, that everybody is violating the Shabbos. There's intermarriage. Intermarriage is rampant during that time, right? And you have Jews, they put up the temple and they're kind of shrugging, like, I guess this is the best that we can do, you know? This is the best that we can do. So the Anshei Knesset HaGedola said, you know what we have to do? We're going to have to put tefillah together. If you think it's the strangest time to compose prayer, right? Because prayer is patterned after the korbanot, is patterned after the sacrifices, right? So as we're reinitiating the sacrificial order, we're also starting prayer, right? That's a fascinating thing, right? That's when we're going to compose our tefillah. That's what composed the idea of Lehit Palel. And what were they doing? What was the men of the great assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, Ezra, Nehemiah, Mordechai, who was a member of Anshei Knesset HaGedola, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, what were they doing? Right? They were saying, you know, these Jews, they don't know what's going to be. Like, they don't really know what to aim for. I think the Gemara itself has an expression. If not, it's an expression, you know, that's out there. You know, better to get a curse from a wealthy person than a blessing from a poor person, right? Because a poor person will give you a blessing that you have enough food to last you the week, right? A rich person will say, you know, may your 401k sink a little bit, right? Right? So what's the problem? When Jews are downtrodden, when Jews are in a low place, and Ezra and Nehemiah saw that they were in a low place, they lose track of what they can dream for. They lose track of what they can ask for. And they said, these are the things that you can be asking for, right? You can ask for Techiyas HaMeisim. You can ask for, you know, revival of the dead. You can ask for health. You can ask for wealth. You can ask that you can be protected. You can ask that the righteous people are taken care of. You can ask that Mashiach come, right? They recognized this wasn't the Messianic era. They said, you can ask for Mashiach to come. And you think about throughout all of history, right, as Jews say this word, said these words, right? So here we can imagine it. You know, we could say the blessings in our prayers of, you know, Baruch Hashem Hamachzir Shchinaso LeZion, that will return his presence to Zion, will rebuild Yerushalayim, Bonei Yerushalayim. We could say that with an image of, like, it's happening. You know, Jerusalem is being rebuilt, right? God is returning to Israel, right? You could see that, you could see that, you know, just do a little bit more. Our prayer is, imagine if you're doing that prayer 80 years ago in Europe, right? Or 400 years ago, or 1,000 years ago in Spain, or any of these other places. What? Jerusalem is going to be rebuilt? What? Are you crazy? How could that possibly be? Forget it. There's no point of thinking about that. To which our Shmona Esrei says, what do you mean? That's something that you should be asking for. That's something that you should be demanding. And that's something that you can dream about. That's something that you can think about. And then the final step is that if I'm really thinking that these things should happen, that these things could happen, and these things, you know, will happen, so then what's my role in having it take place? Right, that's the right. Then what do I do? So in a way, when we go through our 18 or 19 blessings in the morning, right? So it's okay. This person needs help. You know, health. Well, what other things I'm asking for? Okay, and what am I doing about it? Right? If Yaakov says, if it entered Yaakov's mind that I could have found Joseph. Right, Yaakov says, it never entered my mind that I was going to find you. If it entered his mind that maybe Joseph is around, what do you think Jacob would have been doing for all of those years? Think he would have just been sitting in Israel wondering, hey, I guess one day there'll be some kind of coincidence that I'll be brought to find Joseph. Right? No, he would have been looking for him. He would have been, how am I going to track him down? If there was any thought that he was still alive, he was going, right? The problem is there was no thought that he would still be alive. right? But for all of the things that we say are possible every day, that we define as being possible, Hamavarich Esamo Yisrael Bashalom, that there should be peace amongst Jews, right? If we think that it's possible and we're asking for it, so then it also makes us ask the question, okay, and what can I do about it? And what should I do about it? So our tefillah is no longer just, these are the things I need to ask God for. It's now, these are the things that I need to ask of myself. It's now become something of inspiration. What am I doing about these lists of things that I'm asking from God on a daily basis? Right? So that is, so I think that's, in fact, if you look, if you Google pray, right? So the first thing that will come up is not dictionary, but Wikipedia. So Wikipedia cheats a little bit, because there it says, it actually defines it that way. I don't want to put it on because, you know, but clearly somebody had heard my shir, wrote the Wikipedia article, because it's the first sentence is the idea of developing a relationship with a higher being. That's the way they spell it out there. But that is next. So I would like to do a little bit of an exercise, which I here are some pens. And those that have their own, I don't know how many of these work. They've kind of been laying horizontal for a while. You'll see what works. But I figured we could take this opportunity, since we're having a class about prayer, I should take this opportunity to tell you how to make sure your prayers come true. Right? That would be a kind of a good thing to know, right? How to make our prayers come true. No extra charge. Okay, so how do we make our prayers come true? So this was I'll tell you later how I learned this concept. So everybody has a pen or something, you can write down, you have store sheets to write on the back. So the first thing I'd like to do, and you know, you're not going to have to share it, don't worry. It's not like, write down what you want, give it to me, and I'll make it happen, right? We're not doing that. Yeah, make sure it works. I'm sorry, it's not going to... You know, those in the modern age could do it on their iPhone also. That works as well. So the first thing I want you to do is write down something that you want to have happen, right? Something that you want, something, you know, that you're requesting. It could be anything. A friend of mine got in trouble recently. There was an article in the Daily News before the Giants' last game of their season. Right, the last game. I don't know if you remember. The Max certainly remembers that the Giants had to win their last game to get into the playoffs, and they needed like three other things to happen. Right, they needed two teams to win. Whatever, they needed three other games to go a certain way for the Giants to get into the playoffs. So they wrote an article in the Daily News in New York, standard of whatever. Is it appropriate to pray for a Giant, you know, for the Giants to get to the playoffs? Right? Is that an appropriate thing to do? And they interviewed a priest and a rabbi, and they wanted an imam, but he didn't show up or something. But they interviewed the two of them. So you could write something like that, and or you can write something bigger, something larger, etc. At this point, low philalty that the Giants will make the playoffs.
Next.
Yeah. Okay. So now that you've wrote something down, so you have to maybe write down why it hasn't happened yet. Or what's blocking it from happening? What's keeping it from happening? Now that you have something like that, I could either, I think we'll do it this way. If anybody wants to volunteer and say what they've written down, you don't have to, but if somebody, anybody? Nobody? Oh, gosh, nobody? All right, I was banking on it.
Well, I have two things.
Okay.
I have a sister who's been estranged to the family.
Okay.
And that's worked perfectly, your second point. And then I have a brother who's got cancer. So one is being cured, which is truly a miracle. Mm-hmm. And the other is...
A strange one.
A strange one.
Right. So you said, you wrote something about what's keeping it from her coming back.
Well, in. Mary coming back would be someone reaching out,
right,
or an embarrassment. She's poor. She also has an addiction. And then John, of course... Well, that's just up to God at this point. Everything medical has been done.
Right. Okay. So the final step then is, and this would work for all of you, well, what can you do then to change that blockage? Right? What can you do to get the blockage out? So the strange one is easy. I'm not putting words in your right.
No, I can reach out.
But a reaching out.
Right.
Right. And that really, if you all look at your sheets, right, it's probably something along those lines. Right? There's probably something there, right? You have something that you want. There's something that's blocking the way. And there's something, maybe you can't get all the way, like the cancer example, right? Maybe you can't get all the way, but there's something that you can do to change that. So I saw this done once, right? It's as simple as that. That's how you get your prayers answered, right? I saw this done when I was in my previous position. So Rabbi Ilan Feldman from Atlanta came to his daughter was one of the lived in Scottsdale. So he came and he did this. He did this over I think he hypnotized all of us or something. Like it took 40 minutes to go through that little thing that we did in three. But like you know, he said like what who here wants, you know, so some girl then said like I want to learn Hebrew, and he said, well, you know, how are you gonna, you know, what's keeping you? Well, you know, the class is too expensive, and the other one meets a time that I can't go, and I'm in college, or whatever. So he said, well, I don't know, anybody here have an idea? So one person said, well, I'll teach you Hebrew. He said, well, there you go, your prayer was answered, right? But, so on one hand, it's like, you wrestle, okay. But on the other hand, like, well, okay, you did something about it. I mean, you announced the need, and you made a connection. Right, and that's a way of getting it done. So we usually, you know, that's the switch I wanted us to make tonight. Right, we usually think of, okay, I'm going down, and these are a list of things that I'm asking for from God. But on the other hand, while we're doing that, right, in a way, you're then turning around and saying, these are the list of things that I need to work on myself, and perhaps I need to inspire myself. Right, to get done. And which, by the way, which then adds into, I mean, one thing that bugs our teenagers, right, that we used as a paradigm before, is like, okay, fine, I need to ask for things. What about all this praise stuff? I mean, like, come on. You know, he needs to, like, A, he needs to hear it, B, he needs to hear it from me. Like, what does that mean? So the answer is, no, that praise is also about you. Right, that praise is, you think that that's not possible. You think it's not possible that list of things that you're going to be doing over the course of your tefillah. What do you mean? You got God on your team. Right, listen to all the things that God can do. Right, mechayim meisim atarali. He can bring back the dead. So make noflim rofei choli mumatir asurim. Right, he straightens those that are crooked, and he makes the things that seem to be impossible possible. And he can do so many things. So you think that if you don't get started, that God doesn't have the ability to help you along the way? All right, so that's the main shift that I wanted. Just as we kind of shifted last week, God from being this foreign thing that I'm kind of, you know, whatever, to something that's a lot closer and much more connected to me, right? Prayer also, I want to take it out of the kind of mystifying thing, distant thing that I got to send off to God, and make it a lot more closer to home, a lot more. This is no longer just about, these are the things that I need to ask for somebody else to do for me because I'm helpless, but rather it's, these are the list of things that I need to work on getting done, and I have the help of God to help me get it done, and really I'm all powerful. Really, if that's the case, then I really have a lot of power. So that's the story. Next week, I think, is Shabbat, right? Next week is the Sabbath. This Shabbat is Shabbat, and then we'll learn about it. Don't mess up this week, and then next week we'll discuss about that in more detail. So, Shabbat, thank you for coming. Thanks.